right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, September 19th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is an overcast 67 degrees and pretty humid here in upstate New York. We've had rain all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I think we're supposed to get a little more Monday. So where did we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Neural Weapons, Magnetite, Nanobots, and Google's 100 Kilowatt Radio. And we talked about 2 days, a new study that had come out where they had been finding toxic spherical nanoparticles of a ferrous metal called magnetite in people's brains. They did a study on, I don't know, it wasn't a huge number of people. It was maybe 26, I think, or 35. But there were people in cities that have large amounts of pollution, such as Mexico City, and I don't remember, I keep forgetting. It was a city in England. And they said that what was disturbing about this is that though magnetite is found naturally in small amounts in the brain, and they found it also in birds and maybe even bees, they believe that that mineral is responsible for some of our capabilities of being able to detect direction. I don't know about you, but I can't detect. I'm pretty good with a map. I've navigated cross country a few different times long before the days of, at least the first time, cell phone or GPS on my own. So I was pretty good there. I had a map on the seat next to me, looking at the roads and driving through tornadoes and whatever other craziness I ran into. But, I mean, I can't just determine north by wiggling my nose. I still got to look at the stars. Or I got to figure out which direction the lakes are. That usually is the good one for me. Or at least watch the sunrise and the sunset. You should be able to determine. But birds and bees, apparently, and I've read quite a number of studies over the years on this, they think birds and bees actually have built-in compasses, and they think that it has to do with the magnetite. But now they're finding this other magnetite in brains at a very small size, 5 nanometers. They're saying like 20 to 5 nanometers. 20 nanometers was kind of the danger point because that's when it can cross the blood-brain barrier. We started postulating that there could be other things that could be done. If all of our brains have all this magnetic material inside of them, these ferrous oxides, something that they are already utilizing as part of a cancer treatment for glioblastomas. I still can't say it. Brain cancers. We watched a video on that Friday, where they used that ferrous oxide, which magnetite is a ferrous oxide. They didn't say specifically which one. They used a ferrous oxide and they injected it, got it up into the brain, and the nanoparticles all got in around the cells, the tumor cells, and as they vibrated with a certain frequency, and you know, we're going to start looking at some frequencies now. I don't know. I've been reading so much this weekend, and I got to tell you, it feels like my head's going to explode because this really is a topic that we need to spend like a whole month on. And I know there are people out there that have been asking me for the longest time to look at scalar weapons and some of this other mad science of voices in your head and whatever. I mean, guys, there's so much, and it goes so far back, and it's all tied to the military and secret ops. There's just no possible way that we're going to be able to do this in one big chunk. I just can't. My brain literally, I felt like scanners. Remember that movie where the guy's head explodes? Blah! Last night. So there's just no way. But I'm thinking we're going to do them in little nibble servings. So Friday was one chunk. Now today's going to be another. Then we might have to take a few days off and jump over to some DARPA shapeshifting when we left off last week so I can catch back up and pull some more threads. But anyway, So we started watching this video Friday where they were treating brain cancers utilizing these ferrous oxide materials that they got into the brain, little nano-sized. They said typically 20 nanometers. And when they put them under a magnetic field, like in an MRI, they could cause these little ferrous materials that are in the brain to start vibrating. It causes the cells to open up to allow these particles in. Now, as I was digging yesterday, I started really digging into different frequencies between megahertz, gigahertz, tetrahertz, and looking at the three or four different wavelengths. We got your microwave, your millimeter wave, and then your submillimeter wave that are ubiquitous right now. And one of the things I was discovering time and time again in these studies is that, you know, we found it with ultrasound. Ultrasound, they have discovered, is a treatment for Alzheimer's to be able to get the nanobots in to treat them. What you had to do was put them under an ultrasound scanner to open that blood-brain barrier up to get the medications in. Now, before that, probably the easiest way to get it in was either through the gut or through inhalation in that olfactory bulb. But we found out on Thursday and Friday when we were doing research for the story on the magnetite they're finding in people's brains, that that's exactly how those nano ferrous spherical materials are getting into our brain. And remember, we are completely bathed in frequencies everywhere we see, everywhere we look, except we can't see them. We can only detect them with tools. Now, I found a TED Talk presentation last night, and what caught my attention is that this gentleman had been a Silicon Valley engineer until he started to get really sick from electromagnetic radiation. And, you know, I don't know, I've heard of people who say that they are environmentally ill. Aren't we all environmentally ill? But you know what I'm saying? They're environmentally ill from things that you can't see, such as frequencies. And people, first thing they do is put on their righteous hat and tell them that they're a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic, and it's all in your head, Johnny. It's all in your head. Well, it is in your head, Johnny, because Johnny is having some real difficulty with these frying frequencies that are, you need to remember that our bodies are completely electrical. Our brains are electrical. Well, they're chemical as well, but there's electricity. There are electrical processes that are going on. Our muscles and our nervous system are electrical, as well as chemical processes. And just like in any good electronic device, you know, you always have to have that little FCC thing saying that this has been tested, that it will not cause interference. Well, have they been testing them to see if they'd cause interference in humans? Well, it seems not. So anyway, this Jeremy Johnson did a TEDx at Berkeley, which I thought was interesting as well, that they would even let him get on stage and like speak about this. But Jeremy Johnson, I'm going to read his little blurb here. His wife is a medical doctor as well, so this is what kind of gave him the leg up. He started getting sick. He is an engineer. He's got a master's degree. He was working in Silicon Valley. He had a good job, and he had a wife that was a doctor. And they started to investigate why he was getting so sick. And they started to really dig into some things, and they started to find research and information about electromagnetic frequencies that doesn't fare too well for the tech industry or the medical industry or any of these other places that are using ubiquitous wireless. And now we have places such as Google, and that's one of the things we talked about on Friday, Google, as well as Facebook and Amazon and SpaceX and CubeSats, and we got satellites, we got plasma bombing the sky, we got 5G and tetrahertz millimeter wave radiation drones getting ready to go up for communication purposes. And I also discovered, I don't know if you realize it, but some of this tetrahertz stuff that Google's getting ready to embark upon, and by the way, they're launching this out of a spaceport, right? We talked about that in New Mexico. Same exact place Facebook just decided they're putting their data center in New Mexico. Same place where you got Los Alamos Laboratory and all the other crazy shit going on. Yes, that New Mexico that I love so much, but probably glowing. I've been there a few times and I just don't know. There's something that draws me to New Mexico. I don't know what it is. I just don't ever want to leave when I'm there. But that same New Mexico is now going to be launching these Skybender, I think is what Google called them. And they had the FCC application where Google had requested, remember it was all redacted pretty much, but there was a little bit left after the black Sharpie went crazy on the page. the application showed that it was doing all this 5G, and then look, we have some tetrahertz frequencies as well that we're not going to tell you about. Well, tetrahertz has been really good at doing a lot of things to be really creepy for a long time for the military. We'll get into that later. So anyway, back to this TEDx Berkeley I found. It was about 15 minutes. This dude really knows what he's talking about. He kind of gives a broad brush spectrum. But like I said, he worked in Silicon Valley as a civil engineer for 15 years. He has advanced degrees. He got very sick. But he's got a wife who's a doctor. And after becoming what the doctors called electro-hypersensitive in 2011, after extensive exposure to EMF radiation, he embarked on his journey of regaining his health and educating others to critically evaluate theirs. And I guess we're going to kick this off because we need to lay a groundwork. I mean, it is not even these high frequency radiations that's causing us issues. I mean, we're talking down to our cell phone. We're talking down to our baby monitor. There was just a ruling that came out a couple weeks ago. You know, we had talked a while back about them coming out again and going, oh, guess what? After 20 years of telling you that all those European studies about cell phones causing cancerous tumors were bullshit, well, we were wrong. Yeah, they were wrong. Now there's very strong evidence that there's major issues with keeping cell phones anywhere near or on your physical person. Don't put it in your pocket. Don't stick it in your bra. Like, when I heard someone talking about people who stick cell phones in their bra and then this guy actually mentions it, what kind of idiot are you? I'm sorry, but any of the women that listen to the show that are sticking their cell phones in their bra, stop it. Don't even put it in your pocket. I mean, for 20 years, I never wanted a cell phone. I didn't need a cell phone. Work forced me to get a cell phone because I was an engineer and some lunatic salesperson might need to call me to tell me someone's having a freaking problem while I was eating dinner. And they made me get one, but I never wanted one. And just like microwaves, you know what? My microwave's been gone now about 3 years, but I never liked microwaves. When I was a kid, like, I had this thing about plastic. I couldn't eat anything that was in plastic or tasted like plastic or smelled like plastic. It was just this, since I was very little, that plastic smell taste just completely made me gag. And microwaves, when you open them up, they're all plastic. So, you know, and they're like plastic synthetic. And I just never, anytime we had a microwave early on, when I was a kid, it was built into our stove, like inside the stove part of the stove. And it had this big microwave spinning thing inside and had a window in the door. And you could either turn it on and make it hot like a real stove, or you could put your stuff in there, close the door, and pull the latch so it locked it shut. And then turn the microwave thing on and go, and then you can sit right up close next to the window and look inside as your food gets baked by radiation. I just never, ever liked microwaves. But now, we're seeing that all this stuff, and I mean, we really, our generation, I read something last week, I think it was anyone born before 1985, they're saying, is still part of that generation who saw the before time. And I've always said that's what kind of makes us important. We are like the last generation of those people out there who remember the before time. Any of the kids now, they're getting into their adult days. I mean, even my friends I went to high school with, their kids are all in college now, or out of college, have their law degrees. It's pretty sad to think about that as we're all heading toward that big 5-0. Depressing, totally depressing. But the sad fact of the matter is we've been looking at the psychological manipulation and how they have groomed us to just open our arms to this technology because it's so convenient. Remember, we're addicted to the dopamine carrot of convenience and the dopamine carrot of that ding ding, getting your email, ding ding, someone paying attention to you, because they have trained us to be egocentric. It's all about what's in it for me. It's all about being better than the Joneses. It's all about consumeristic society, Mr. a la Edward Bernays. And we are the last of the resistant consumers. You know, we got Nana. She was never too sure about the computer. And then even my friends in high school, my one friend Tina, I'm sure Tina probably doesn't listen to this show, but Tina, when I was growing up, we had a PC, and it was an old clunker. I mean, now it would be. It was probably a 286, if I had to guess back in those days. It was definitely before the days of the 3 or 486. The hard drive was like the size of a big tissue box. It cost like mucho dineros. I remember when my dad did the upgrade to probably some crazy amount, like 25 meg or something. It was like $500, and I remember he saved up for it and everything, worked all kinds of overtime, so he could get this big hard drive to go into this big, ugly computer. But we had one at home, and my dad was a big adult kid when he was older, and so we always had toys, and we had a big 10-foot satellite dish, too, because they didn't even get cable out there until after I graduated high school and moved out. Then they finally got cable, but we didn't have it out there. We had these toys that were long before most of the majority of consumer America. But one of the things that they really tried to do is to get us into that mindset. The connectivity and sharing information and being able to email. You know, you didn't really have internet back in those days, but you had closed systems like Prodigy, and then came like CompuServe and AOL. It was kind of later down the line, where you and your friends could all join up for $9.95 a month and pay for your dial-up and communicate, play games together very slowly over this newfangled thing that had an URL. A URL. I remember learning all about how to decode URLs. It was pretty cool. But anyway, and you know, there was a big improvement over the Commodore 64, which I had one of those as well, which really couldn't do much of anything on. You just had this tape drive thing. I don't know, eventually they came out with double disk drives and that, but mine still had a tape drive, so you had to wait for the tape to load the program, and then you really couldn't do much at all. But this newfangled internet thing was amazing. It connect the world together. And that's where the world took off from there. I would say probably from 1990. Well, even before then. Let me think. 88, 86, 84, 85 maybe. Right around there. 1985 must have been when we got our 286. 1982 is when I got my Commodore. Then my dad actually let me take that computer to school in 1988, which I can't believe he let me do that. But I was the coolest kid in the dorms, and nobody had a PC in their dorm room. Couldn't really do anything with it. There was no connectivity in the dorm room. There was no wired even. let alone wireless. But we've come a long way. We were that last generation. And actually, that's funny, because it was. It was about 1985 that I said was the 286 computer. I started college in 86. And that was where the story was saying, the 1985, anyone born after that really doesn't remember the world pre-internet. So now we have this problem, because here we are, arriving at middle age, late 40s, early 50s and beyond. And we're being hailed as the far-right conservatives now. We're no longer liberals or whatever. We're all standing up saying, hey, back the truck up, Chuck. We got some dangers. Let's not be lemmings and go running off the cliff in our orgy of technology. In the name of mad science gone mad, let's start splicing and gene dicing humans. Let's let CRISPR go across the world because it's going to save humanity. They don't want to hear about the dangers, because you know what? We are not deemed important anymore, but we are important. We are that last generation that can see the dangers, that remember the world when children went outside and played after school. When in the summertime, kids went out, we played all day, maybe ran in for lunch to go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, say hi, Mom, and went back outside until the streetlights came on. We were that generation where children actually learned to use their brains, use their creativity. You didn't get everything you wanted. And when you broke something, Johnny, well, too freaking bad. I told you to take care of it. We don't have the money, Johnny, to get another one. So next time you'll remember. And this is when we were still being raised as humans. And I know you're going to say, like, Joel, we're still human. Yeah, we're still human, but humans and the family unit, the traditional parental roles, still were somewhat in existence in the 70s. Of course, then you had suffragettes and women's rights, and you know, so my mom started smoking and then got a job. I mean, that was all Bernaysian. That all came back from Edward Bernays. And it was a way to make more tax dollars by getting everybody to go to work, and women, of course, that whole oral fixation with the cigarette in the mouth is going to make them feel all independent. And read all about that. This was a big, sticky, ugly, stinky ball of psyop that they played on society. So now, shit's smashed everywhere. The family is smashed. The traditional ways of bringing up your child are smashed. Education is smashed. Isn't about thinking, it's about test taking. We got Billy Gates in there forcing his common core on everyone's throats, except for Florida. I saw Florida just turn it down. We have technology now taking over even our classrooms. Corporate sponsors across the board, because, oh my God, we have to teach the children. And as we're making technology an everyday part of children's lives, they'll never remember the day without it. They will never have a day when they're turned off. And that's very sad. You know, one of the things that I still love is to just go get lost in the woods. There's a spot where we go sometimes. There's no cell signal. There is no internet. You can barely get an FM signal to listen to the radio. And it is just nature. They got bald eagles there, guys. We saw a bald eagle this summer come swooping down over the lake and grab a fish out of the water with its talons. There were about 10 of us there. We saw it. And went flying back up into the hills. I mean, talk about just incredibly amazing. and not 1 ounce of connectivity there. It's beautiful, but there aren't very many places like that left on this planet. And as Google and Facebook are launching satellites and sky benders with radiation spewing down all over the planet to make ubiquitous internet in every corner of the globe, including Africa. Except, of course, if your satellite explodes, Facebook, SpaceX. Those places that are there now will no longer be in the very near future. So anyway, let's see if we can connect. I rambled for 28 minutes, which I really didn't intend to do. But this is this Jeremy Johnson, former Silicon Valley civil engineer, who has electrohypersensitive disorder. And he now comes out and speaks about the effects and all the negative impacts of electric magnetic field exposure. I don't know, it's only a few minutes, but this will be a really good setup to kick into some of this other stuff that I dug up here this weekend. So, all right, let me see if I can join the call. Hopefully cross our fingers that this works. This computer is going on paperclips and chewing gum. All right, here we go. Jeremy Johnson, TEDx Berkeley, and this was February 18th of 2016. And maybe if we're lucky, it is trying. I don't know. Everything gets all funky when I try and do a video. Worst case scenario, I got it all set up here on this other computer if I had to. If I had to, hold on. Yeah, you know what? Let's try this. We're gonna hang up. We're gonna hang up. This poor machine's been going a week and a half now without a reboot, and it's screaming at me. All right, let's try this one. This machine is still taxed, but a little less taxed than the other one. All right. And if I can get into chat, I can hit this link. And we'll be right as rain. Here we go. Jeremy Johnson. Can we hear anything? Wireless wake-up call. There we go. Enjoy.
So I'd like to begin by asking a few questions. Who knows if they have a wireless smart meter on their home? Okay. And who has their smartphone in their pocket right now? Great. And who's read the fine print in your owner's manual that says that the smartphone should never be within about an inch of the body? So today, I'm going to speak to why we can no longer assume that our wireless technology is safe. Technology has allowed us many benefits. It's connected us to people and to places, and it's brought us convenience that few could have imagined just 10 years ago. It's also brought us tremendous economic benefits. If we can look at how technology has increased in our lives in just the last 8 years, it started with the iPhone, and then tablet computing, ubiquitous Wi-Fi, the smart meter and the smart home, and wearable tech, and now the Internet of Things. If we could imagine how this would look, it would actually look like this. This is an artist's rendition of what Wi-Fi in our public spaces looks like. We could actually hear what microwave radiation sounds like with a device like this. So if anybody would like to hear what their smartphone or their smartwatch sounds like, come and see me at the end, and I can show you. But how does this affect our bodies? That's the question I want to ask, because this exponential rise in microwave radiation can have effects. And that's what scientists and medical doctors around the world are now saying, especially when it comes to children, because they're going to be affected by this their entire lives. But today, I also want to share a few solutions. I want to give everyone here things that you can do in your own lives in order to reduce this type of exposure. So I actually got into this topic about 5 years ago. Before then, I was a young technology enthusiast. I always used my smartphone and Wi-Fi. I've worked in Silicon Valley and have a master's degree in engineering. So if anyone had told me that wireless technology could have health effects, I would have thought they're crazy. So if you're thinking that right now, I can relate. But this all changed for me over the period of about 1 week. I started to experience headaches, ringing in the ears, insomnia, and a fatigue and brain fog that I'd never experienced before. And I shared this with a colleague at work, and she said, you know, the exact same thing happened to her husband when a wireless smart meter was installed in their home. So I went home that evening, and I checked downstairs, and sure enough, we had a bank of wireless smart meters installed right below our bedroom in San Francisco. So this started me on a journey to learn as much about this topic as I possibly could. I now have a website about this, and I'm contacted by people all around the world every day who are experiencing the exact same things. It can be when they have a wireless smart meter installed, or a new Wi-Fi router, or even a cell tower placed across the street from their home. These are the common symptoms that people start to experience. This is actually from a published paper on the health effects of wireless smart meters. So, just here in the Bay Area, I'm in touch with dozens of people who've had their lives changed by this. Medical doctors, high school principals, teachers and students, IT professionals, and even entrepreneurs. These are people who had a normal life, and then over a short period of time, went to where they could no longer work, where they could no longer go to an office. Some of them actually have had to move out of their homes because they can't be in an environment which is normal now for most people. I've been in touch with people around the world who've become homeless because of this. There's many people that's actually happened to. And unfortunately, I know of people who've actually taken their lives because there's essentially no place they can go. And this is something that society does not yet recognize. My own life has been tremendously changed by this. After that first exposure to wireless smart meters, now I can no longer be in an environment with strong Wi-Fi for very long. So I can't go to my work the way I used to be able to. Most environments are now essentially toxic to me. So even finding a safe place to live has become very difficult. Imagine not being able to live in an apartment building where everyone has Wi-Fi, or to be able to live next to a cell tower. This is actually a proposed cell tower here in Berkeley. The residents have actually stopped it for now, but most churches and most schools now have cell towers on them. And so it exposes the people around them, and of course the students who go to those schools. This is a cell tower in San Francisco. That brown thimble on top of the telephone pole is a cell tower. And these are being placed every couple blocks. So you could have an amazing home, and then 1 week, a company can come and put a cell tower right outside your window. So this is something that's happening throughout the Bay Area, and it's going to be happening throughout the United States. So it makes it so that people like myself have a hard time finding a place to live, but it also is ratcheting up the exposure of the entire population. So you might be asking, perhaps some people are being injured by this, but if you're not feeling it, it's probably not that big of a deal. And I think that's a very common experience. But it's not as simple as saying that just a few unfortunate people are being affected by this. Because what the science shows is that we're all affected on some level, whether we can feel it or not. And the reason is because essentially our bodies are electric. Every cell in our body communicates using tiny electric signals. It's how our nervous system operates. So to think that we could put an exponential amount of microwave radiation into our environment and not feel effects is simply false. To illustrate this, I actually had many friends come to me when I started to experience this, and they would say, "Jeremy, are you sure you aren't making this up in your head?" And I thought this too, myself at the beginning. But then a year or two later, they would come to me and they'd say, "You won't believe it, but now I'm feeling pain in my arm when I use my cell phone, or when I put it to the head, or when a new Wi-Fi router is installed." So this is something where when people have more of an exposure, more people are being affected. And it's not just headaches and insomnia. It's much more serious things, such as infertility, DNA damage, and eventually cancer. This is what the research is starting to show. And you don't have to take my word for it. I encourage you to start researching this for yourselves. If you simply Google EMF research, this is a screenshot of what you'll find. The World Health Organization is the first link there, and they actually in 2011 came out and said this wireless technology is possibly carcinogenic. Now there's scientists around the world that say that it's most likely carcinogenic. The third link there is actually my own website. It's there because the last 5 years I've gathered research from around the world that shows that we now have enough evidence to at least take precaution when it comes to this technology. So isn't this regulated? And this is one of the most interesting things I've found. The Federal Communications Commission is who is supposed to be regulating wireless technology. But if you look at the regulations, they're almost 20 years old. So that means our most advanced technology is using science that's at least 20 years old. But not only that, they're based on a concept which is nearly 50 years old, which says if microwave radiation does not heat us, then it can't possibly hurt us. But there's now hundreds of studies that show that this is false. So how is it that we have a regulatory body that's not protecting the public?
Ding.
Well, like many issues, like many public health issues in our country, you end up having industry influencing the regulatory body. And that's what's happening here. So you have a revolving door between the wireless lobby and the FCC commission. So that's what's happening. Plus, the science is heavily influenced by industry funding. This is a study by Dr. Henry Lai. He looked at 326 studies based on the biological effects of cell phone radiation. He found that about half of the studies showed effects and half didn't. That's pretty normal for this type of research. But what he found that was interesting was that if you looked at who funded the studies, 70% of the independent studies showed effects, and only 32% of the industry-funded studies showed effects. So you see that there's an influence in money on this topic. Just like many other topics, tobacco is another one where essentially the industry-funded science that was going to show their products were safe. So that's the bad news. And now I want to share some good news. And that is that there are solutions for this. We are going to have the industry start to create safer products, but there are ways that we can both protect ourselves and move industry forward. So one of the primary things we can do is to move towards fiber optics, because this is a way that we can make our homes safer, our businesses, and our schools. So fiber optics are safe, They're secure, and there's absolutely, they're one of the fastest things we can use. Another way we can go is to design products which are safer. So currently we have product designers and engineers working together, but we can bring in biophysicists and biologists to work together to create products that don't just emit right underneath the FCC regulations, but emit the least amount of any type of electromagnetic fields as possible. If smart meters had been designed to use either fiber optics or to emit just once or twice a day, rather than the 10,000 times they do emit, then I wouldn't be standing here today, and thousands upon thousands of people around the world would not have been injured by smart meters. So what are some things that all of us can do? This is one of the most important things, because everyone wants to know how to essentially protect themselves and their families. So the first thing is to make sure we use our cell phones wisely. I mentioned that you don't want to put the cell phone within about an inch of the body. The industry's telling us this now. So make sure you use speakerphone, get an air tube headset, and when it's on the body, make sure that you put it on airplane mode, when it's either in the pocket or sometimes in the bra. And when it comes to kids, we don't want to have kids use cell phones, but if they must, then please teach them how to use these wisely. We can wire our homes. This is, most people don't need Wi-Fi in their home. So move towards Ethernet, move towards fiber optics, and if you must have Wi-Fi, make sure you turn it off at night. You can get a simple timer so you don't even have to think about it. When it comes to kids, we want to reduce their exposures as much as possible. So if they use an iPad, put all of the data on the iPad and then turn the Wi-Fi off. In schools, I simply do not think we need to have Wi-Fi in schools, because we're filling those classrooms with microwave radiation. We can have amazing technology, but it can be wired. And this is where I think we're going to have to go. When it comes to the smart meter and the smart home, I recommend you opt out. I've had wealthy, early adopting families contact me who went all in on the smart home, and they ended up getting sick within a few months. So this is something that affects families, and I just recommend that you don't go down this path, because it's a technology we do not need. And one of the last things I want to, solutions I want to give today is to create a safe place to sleep, because this is one of the most important things, because this is when your body rejuvenates, and it's when you can make sure that everything's off. So turn off all your wireless devices, unplug things. If you have a baby monitor, I actually recommend that you turn that off, especially at night. I just do not recommend those for kids. And if you do these things, I know many people who've ended up sleeping better. They have a much clearer during the day, and their fatigue is much less. So this is something which I recommend everyone can do. So in conclusion, I want to say that this is a problem that we can solve. There's tremendous people around the world working on this right now. And I believe we're coming to a tipping point where enough people realize that this is an important topic and that there are solutions. So I recommend that you share this with the people who are closest to you. Because if enough people wake up to this issue, then industry will start creating safe technology. And once they do that, our entire society can move towards a healthier future. Thank you.
You know,
hold on one second.
Let me disconnect here. You know, what's interesting is that he's like, yeah, you know, if we all speak up, the industry will do something about creating safer technologies. And all these years that we've been bathing the human race in electromagnetic frequencies, I don't know, when did we first get wireless? 20 years ago, at least, I would say, at least close. Well, maybe not 20. But a cell phone, I'm trying to think of when the first technology, I mean, cell phones, even back in maybe the late 70s, I remember my uncle having this big, huge block, it was a car, quote-unquote car phone, and when you would turn that sucker on, the hairs on your arm would stand up. That was like the first telltale sign, don't put that near your head. But we have Google, we have Facebook, we have DARPA, we have the Air Force and NASA and Verizon, and now the whole space program, probably many of the universities up in Alaska especially, that have been messing around with these wireless technologies, and they're looking to push the spectrum even further to see what kind of wonders we can do in the 21st century Internet of Everything age. So we are connected at a cellular and DNA level once we tie in precision medicine. But the fact of the matter is, and this Jeremy, that was a very good little 16-minute lecture he gave. I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was very telling, especially from someone who is an industry insider from Silicon Valley. And like I said, his wife is a doctor as well, so they did a lot of research before he came out and started speaking. But the sad fact of the matter is, these huge behemoths aren't stopping anything. Okay? This is the way the world is going to go. And I know fiber optics, you know, we're now going to be able to do Li-Fi. There's going to be super high-speed data transfer over LED light. Except that we've already discovered that light can influence the brain. We discovered when they had genetically modified bacteria that they got into brain cells that allowed those cells to be light-sensitive. All it took was a few flashes of light to either insert or remove memories. And I still have some of those stories queued up here because there's a whole progression of that I want to look at as well. As we have wearable computing, and then we even read that little sensor, the grain of a sand that can be an implantable and be all about taking care of Nana remotely 24/7 with real-time statistics. You know, this technology is going to be moving inside of you. It's not going to be getting less. It's going to be getting smaller, yes. Remember, out of sight, out of mind. We're bathed in all different kinds of electromagnetic radiation. You know, he talked about smart meters. We haven't looked really at that at all. But that ties right in with all the smart home technology that's coming now as well. The dopamine carrot of convenience. Be able to open and close your doors with a wave of your hands. Remember, Regina Duggan talked about having superpowers. To be able to swallow that little pill that turns you into a walking token. But as this technology spins out now, because as we're getting older, that younger generation who just wants more and more because they're addicted to the dopamine technology carrot is going to go running off that cliff for the promise, that promise of utopia, the future 21st century George Jetson world that we all thought we were going to end up in. But guys, it's all a big lie. It's all about being able to connect you, surveil you, be able to determine whether or not you're going to commit pre-crime. Being able to bag and tag every asset that they have on this planet. And you are an asset. Us and our raw materials, not just within us, but on this planet and now on other planets and now on comets. I just saw they're launching a new mission to go land on an asteroid. I think it's an asteroid, actually, not a comet. And start mining, because all these minerals, and of course we can detect all kinds of chemical composition now remotely, including in human bodies, by the way. Utilizing wireless and laser technologies. So anyway, Let's get back here. So he talked about now, you know, we heard over the last 20 some years about the lunatics that were saying, oh, maybe cell phones cause cancer. Those people over in Europe were being all pesky. And we said, no, 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 don't worry about it. Our studies don't show the same results. There's nothing wrong with being on a cell phone. I don't know if you ever saw the experiments, but they did something where they had fluid to kind of represent brain fluid, and then they had this thing that had a sensor in it inside of the fluid. And then they just put the cell phone along the outside and measured what type of radiation was being received inside. And they were like, whoa, dude, the radiation is like bathing the brain, and it's causing cell anomalies and issues. And they're like, no, no, it isn't. Well, guess what? Now it just might be. Do cell phones cause cancer? This is from June 13, 2016. I knew it was just the summer. Probably, but it's complicated. Out of Scientific American, the degree of risk almost certainly depends on the length and the strength of exposure, but we still don't know how significant the actual danger is. Now, remember, this is just talking about cell phones, but you can apply some of the general results of electromagnetic radiation in general and what it's going to do to the human body, just not the brain. I mean, the brain as well. And then when you put that and relate it to children, and we look at all these behavioral issues that we are having now with children, it's very disturbing to me that now they're finding that even texting, I mentioned that the other day, and I think we covered that story when it first came out. They're finding when they're studying brain patterns and people who are texting that our brains are actually outputting a whole different brainwave pattern than they've ever seen before. I mean, this technology is changing us in ways that we do not understand. Before you trash your cell phone, or rather responsibly recycle and dispose of them, a careful review of the data and the real-life human implications is needed. And here are the facts. The National Toxicology Program just concluded a massive 2-year study investigating the potential health hazards of cell phone use on rats and mice, and most notably including specific radio frequencies and modulations currently used in the U.S. telecommunications industry. Now, that's the industry that I came out of, all right? That's why this is a big deal to me. I mean, even more reasons than that, because it's just off the hook now. Everyone and anyone is going to own some sort of wireless tower with ever-increasing frequencies and higher energy beams. How can this be good for any of us? We have the FCC who's redacting applications from large global corporations as to the exact reasons why they are launching high frequency, high bandwidth tetrahertz technologies over the United States. The National Toxicology Program has chosen to publish the preliminary findings in rats, but the study found that cell phone exposure increases the incidence of what? Oh, malignant gliomas. That's how you say it. Now I see it, how it's spelled, G-L-I-O-M-A. The malignant gliomas that, hey, guess what? We can treat with those ferrous oxide nanoparticles that, oh, we almost have in our brains from combustion, according to that study. Yes, those ones. We can heat them up. We can make brain cells explode. How great is that? Study found that exposure increases the incidence of malignant gliomas of the brain, i.e. brain cancer, and schwannomas that are also called neuromas of the heart. Ding! So someone in chat brought up that the heart is also an electrical organ, which you are absolutely correct, and apparently affects the heart and puts cancers in the heart. I haven't heard too many cases of heart cancers, but that's messed up. Neuromas, N-E-U-R-O-M-A-S. While neuromas are not really cancers, they are tumors and can profoundly impact the protective sheathing of the peripheral nerves, which can lead to severe pain and disability. Human studies of pre- and post-2010 in humans, there have been numerous case-control studies of cancer and exposure to RF and EMF frequencies, and the case-control studies, studies that compare exposure to cell phones of people who have gliomas with those who don't, prior to 2010, were, of course, all negative. We didn't find any connection. We were just talking about that in chat as well. No, they didn't. They said, no, don't worry about it, Johnny. It's all in your head. However, those findings could easily be due to lack of sufficient time for cancers to develop, yes, or big money in the industry, making sure it never came out. And that's something that Jeremy Johnson actually said in that lecture he just gave. Three case-control studies conducted since 2010, though, have all been positive, with an increase in gliomas in the two highest exposure groups. And two studies found that the tumors occurred on the same side as the phone use. And guys, I had a girl that I work with, and on the side, she sold cell phones for one of the big cell phone providers, and she had that thing glued to her head 24/7. And guess what? 24 years old, she ended up with a glioma right over her ear. You know, I don't know whatever happened to her either. That was a very long time ago. I'd have to say probably back in the early 2000s. But I remember when that happened, I thought to myself, shit, no one's going to tell me that those two things are not connected. So anyway, put on a seatbelt, because this just came out in June. You're really not hearing much of anything in the mainstream news about this. And they are getting ready to launch even higher frequency bandwidth, ubiquitous frequencies to connect us not only through our phones, but through our clothes, through our implantables, through our medical devices, through our smart homes, through our smart cars, through everything, guys. All right, make sure you stick around. Lonnie Clark's live up next. Have an awesome Monday. We'll continue this tomorrow. Everybody take care.